Hey guys, I'm your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to this week's episode of Koobana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. My latest novella, Ghost in the Box, is now out. If you want a quick jaunt through a creepy ghost story that will keep you guessing until the end, then check it out on Amazon right now. We also have a brand new design up in the Koobana merchandise store. You can check that out at koobana.store. We have shirts, mugs, stickers, masks, and much more. So do check it out and help support the show at the same time. This week, we're taking a look at some strange and perplexing stories that will leave you scratching your head after and wondering, perhaps, what was really going on. First up, some university students decide to head out for a test of courage one night and come across two girls in a graveyard. This alone is odd enough, but the longer they spend in the presence of these girls, the more they realize that perhaps something is very, very wrong. Find out what in Desire for the End. This memory involves a person, not a ghost. But as the years pass by, my confidence is starting to fade. It happened when I was 19 years old. I had graduated from high school, but I didn't have regular work. I just lazed around and did part-time work whenever something struck my fancy. My friends at the time were the same guys I hung out with in high school, and on this particular day, we all gathered at this one guy's house. These friends were pretty well known as delinquents in the area, but I wasn't a great fighter, and I didn't have a bike either. I was simply friends with their leader since childhood, and so we sometimes hung out. It was getting pretty late that night, so we decided to head out for a little test of courage. Nobody actually believed in ghosts, and nobody was scared either, but we went along because we thought that maybe we could pick up a few girls along the way. One of my friends had a van, so all six of us piled into it. We made our way towards the nearest test of courage spot. It was a graveyard in the mountains, with graves spreading all the way up to the top. When we arrived at the entrance, we saw a white figure standing at the very top of the graveyard. Looking closer, it appeared to be two people, and as they got closer, we saw they were girls about junior high age. Their hair was long and dry, like they didn't take care of it, and it honestly reminded me of a doll's hair. Even now, I still remember it. Their hair covered their faces, so I couldn't see their expressions. Facially, they looked slightly different, but otherwise, they looked exactly the same. The reason they looked white from a distance was because they were wearing summer uniforms. Where on earth had they come from? In order to leave, you had to climb further up the mountain to get out by car, and yet, they didn't appear to have anyone else with them. They gradually approached us. Thinking about it more closely, you would think these girls would be scared of a bunch of delinquents in an empty graveyard at night. And yet, the girls came to a stop right in front of us, with no sign of any emotion on their faces. A fear I couldn't put into words overwhelmed me. This didn't make any sense. That feeling was probably what people meant when they spoke about getting chills, and the other guys seemed to feel the same way. "So, where are you guys from?" the leader M asked. The girls slowly turned and pointed towards the top of the mountain at the same time, their faces remaining unchanging. I started sweating bullets. Then a dog suddenly came running towards us from out of nowhere. Its eyes were white, like it had cataracts or something. The timing with which it appeared almost caused me to scream, but then it was soon followed by an old man, who I guess was the owner. The old man apparently lived nearby, and this was his usual walking route. The six of us and the two girls then joined him on his walk. He walked ahead of us with the girls, and they were talking about something. "This is the grave of someone with no one to tend to it," the old man said, kicking a mound of dirt. "You see that grave tablet over there on the ground, yeah?" He exchanged a few more words with the girls, and then he left, without even turning around to look at us. We were dumbfounded, but then the girls came over and spoke to us for the first time. The old guy said that up ahead is even scarier than here. A place where you can find lots of cursed straw dolls. Want to take a look? Honestly, I didn't want to go, but I couldn't tell some junior high girls that I was too scared. And so, the girls got in the van with us and we made our way over. We asked them all sorts of questions, like why they were hanging around in such a spot in the first place. It was common at the time to pick girls up, mess with them a little, and then leave them stranded halfway up the mountain. "If that's what happened to you, then we'll do what we can to help," Em said. But the girls just shook their heads no, their faces still expressionless, and other than telling us the directions to go, they didn't say anything else. They didn't look like they'd been attacked, at any rate. But I wanted there to be a reason why. Why were these girls standing on the mountain at this time of night? But the girls didn't even speak to each other and just guided us on our way. Finally, we reached our destination, a shrine. It was the first time I'd ever been there, and it was much, much creepier than the graveyard. It was a small shrine surrounded by large cedar trees, but the girls quickly went further into the trees behind the shrine. "Those girls just heard about this place for the first time from that old man, right?" Kay whispered. "So, why are they rushing ahead? They didn't say a single thing in the car, and yet they're both rushing off in the same direction like they know where they're going." I got chills again, but it wasn't like we could just leave them there either. We hurried after them, but they were fast. So fast that we had to jog a little to keep up. Suddenly, the two girls stopped. They pointed to something above us without saying a word. I looked up, and it was a large cedar tree full of numerous holes, like large nails had been hammered into it. No. Looking closer, all the trees in that area were full of holes. And then, finally, I found a straw doll. We gasped in surprise, but still, the girls' faces didn't change. "Let's get out of here. You girls must be tired. Come on, we'll drive you back," Em said, trying to hide his fear. But then the girls spoke. "We can't stop here. There's somewhere even better, so let's go." I was speechless. "Come on, let's go back," I said, forcing the words out. But it seemed that nobody else wanted to appear chicken in front of the junior high girls. "Okay, let's go," they said, and then the girls turned and returned down the same path they'd come from. We panicked and rushed after them. Kay seemed to be the only one who agreed with me, and his face was pale as he muttered, "This is a trap. A trap. They're taking us somewhere." He kept repeating it over and over, his face white as a ghost, and the longer he went on, the more he frightened me. We all climbed back into the van. Em tried to turn the stereo on, but nothing happened. Maybe it was broken. An uncomfortable silence followed, but nobody dared speak. Once again, the only sound in the van was that of the girls giving directions. We arrived at another shrine further on up the small hill. There were stairs on the left and right leading up to the shrine that appeared symmetrical. Either set of stairs would take you there, and they were probably the same distance as well. Without saying a word, the girls split up and each took one of the sets of stairs. Again, they didn't speak in the car, and they didn't even look at each other once we all got out, and yet they split up without hesitation. And of course, the stairs leading to the shrine were surrounded by dense forest. It was a creepy place that no normal woman would want to visit. And yet, these junior high girls strode up the stairs without fear. It was clearly strange. Us guys panicked and split into two groups of three and followed the girls. Unable to hold it in any longer, I finally spoke to the girl in front of me. "You guys are weird. Why were you standing in the graveyard? If you're here for a test of courage, you certainly don't seem scared at all. So, why were you there?" The girl didn't answer, which just annoyed me further. I asked again. I pestered her so much that she finally gave in and answered, "We were looking for somewhere to die." And then, for the first time, the girl looked at me. But rather than looking me in the eyes, it was like she was looking right through me, to some point far in the distance. Then she faintly smiled. The edges of her lips raised just slightly, and a tiny bit of spit there glistened. It felt like a bucket of cold water had been dumped over me. I looked over at the other guys, and they were all white as sheets. They had no doubt heard what she said, but I was the only one who saw her eyes and the spit on the side of her mouth. Just as I was about to run, we reached the top. The group on the other side reached the top at the exact same time. M rushed over, his face pale. "Did you hear? Did you guys hear?" Seemed he had asked the other girl the same question. At any rate, we took the girls back to the van, even though they said they weren't ready to leave yet. We asked them why they wanted to die, but they didn't answer us. "Don't do anything stupid, okay? Are you being bullied? If so, we'll mess them up for you, so don't do anything hasty." But the girls just shook their heads, no matter what we said. "So then, why?" "No reason." "What do you mean, no reason?" "I don't know. I guess I'm just fed up with life." Again, the girl's face was expressionless, and she seemed to be looking somewhere far in the distance. Despite having different facial features, both girls looked exactly the same. "Look, I'm beat, so I'm going to take you guys home. Tell us how to get to your place. I'll drive you right there," M said to the girls in a strong tone as they were trying to get out, and then he started the car. The girls seemed to be locals and kept alternating, right, left, the whole way. Then they both said, "Here," at the same time, as though harmonizing with each other. There was no house where the van stopped. "Are you sure? I'll drive you straight to your house," M said. "Here," the girls said again, and then they got out of the van. We seemed to be on the other side of the shrine on the hill that we were at earlier. It felt like we had driven a lot with all the turning, but in reality, we hadn't gone very far. We were more than a little creeped out, and we felt like we'd more than done our duty, so we let the girls go and took off. "Look!" Kay screamed almost immediately. The two girls were walking towards an opening in the forest surrounding the shrine we were just at. "They're gonna go in there again." M pressed down on the horn. Then, like a scene from a movie, the two girls slowly turned around. Their heads tilted slightly and symmetrically. It was too dark to see their eyes, but they seemed to be faintly smiling. When I saw the edges of their mouths glittering the same way, I screamed, "Run!" before I could stop myself. We sped away at full speed, and Kay started muttering again next to me. "I told you we shouldn't have gone to that shrine." "Oh, what's so dangerous about it?" I screamed, suddenly very annoyed. "Those girls are too short to reach the branches on those trees, so they can't, you know, hang themselves." I got chills once again. "What the hell are you saying? What the hell, man?" the other guys screamed. Then Dee, who had been quiet up until that point, seemed to have realized something. "Hey, when do schools change their uniforms again? It's already November. Those girls shouldn't be in their summer uniforms anymore. I don't know what happened to them after that. We ended up spending the rest of that day at Em's house, and then we checked the evening paper that night with trepidation. There was nothing in there about any girls having gone missing, or committing suicide. But Kay seemed to be the only one who couldn't sleep, and he sat in the corner of the room the whole time, with a blank look in his eyes. I still sometimes see those same friends, but nobody ever speaks about what happened that night. But Kay alone I haven't seen since that night. He wasn't originally a member of that group to begin with, so I don't think any of the others have seen him either. But whenever I remember him muttering about it being a trap, I start to wonder what might have happened if they took us further in, and the thought gives me chills. After all, I was the only one who heard him say that. In our next story, another group of friends enjoy hunting for the supernatural, although they're not often successful in their hunt. They draw a supernatural symbol on their arms that they soon forget about, but that decision quickly comes back to haunt them. Find out why in Cold Aging. The story I'm about to tell you is a story that someone working for my father's publishing company once wrote, a personal experience of his that, for some reason or another, was shelved. If possible, I'd love to never come into contact with spirits again for the rest of my life. I hope that, perhaps, by writing this down, that I may be able to warn others like myself who live only in the moment, and perhaps atone for what I did, or make this horrifying scar disappear. It happened on August 14th, in the 54th year of Showa, 1979. I was 21 years old, a young student brimming with curiosity. On May 3rd of that same year, I climbed a mountain not too far from home that was famous for UFO sightings with three of my friends from junior high, Inoue, Murayama, and Ide, aliases. The trip ended in vain with no UFO sightings, and we started planning our next trip in the hopes that, perhaps, this time. I don't know what we were thinking, but we decided to draw the magical Cold Aging symbol on the base of our left arms, around the same area as the BCG shot, just in case no UFOs appeared. Anyway, at around 8 p.m. on August 14th, I met my friends close to home, and with me in the driver's seat, we drove south for 2 hours to a village that one of my colleagues from my part-time job had told me about. This village was close to where my grandmother, on my mother's side, grew up, and although it sat over 1 kilometer above sea level, there were only 2 roads in and out of the village at the time. One of those roads passed by my grandmother's house, but it was only 2 meters wide, and it went further into the mountains than the other road, so few people ever used it. As we passed, we snuck into my grandmother's house to take a small break. My grandmother had already passed away by that time, and my grandfather was staying with my aunt, so the house was pretty much empty. And what of the locks, you ask? Well, it was an old house, so the door was kept shut with a small bar that was easy to remove. Naturally, there was no parking spot at the house, but it was late at night and I didn't think anyone else would pass by, so I left the car on the side of the road and went inside to drink a can of beer with my buddies. The lot next to the house was empty, but it had a long history of people with illnesses, businesses going bankrupt, etc. So, you know, people thought of it as cursed. So I couldn't exactly park there. The house sat between mountains to the front and back, and the road passed directly by the front. On the other side of the road was an old-fashioned Japanese-style toilet and Goemon-style Japanese bath. However, there was a graveyard next to these, so once the sun set, you needed to be quite courageous to head over there to do your business. And on top of that, All the nearby houses at the time were empty, so there was basically no light whatsoever, other than the stars and Milky Way in the dark sky above. Unfortunately for us, that night was cloudy, so everything was enveloped in darkness. Right as I finished my first can of beer, Murayama stood up and put his shoes on, saying he needed to pee. He went outside, and then almost immediately came running back in, slamming the door behind him and slotting the wooden bar back in place. He was so violent and sudden that we were taken aback. "What happened?" I asked as he tried to catch his breath. His face was pale.
Someone was standing by the pole over there,"
he managed to spit out, his teeth chattering. Of course, in a place like this, at a time like this, it was more than a little strange that someone might be standing outside, so...
"It has to be a ghost," he said. "It was vaguely lit up and I couldn't see its outline very well."
I could sense the terror in his words, and nobody wanted to go outside and confirm what he was saying.
"Hey, there's that weird religion, yeah? The guys that wear white and carry trumpet shells. It looked like an old man dressed just like that, and he looked right at me. Our eyes met."
As I listened to him explain, I thought back on the stories my mother and grandmother used to tell me, but I couldn't recall them mentioning anything like that. After talking it over, we decided to stay where we were until morning. At first, nobody was able to hide their fright at each and every little noise, but the more we drank, and the more time that passed, we gradually started laughing and joking more. But then, shortly after 2 a.m., we heard a tapping sound coming from the window from the rear of the house. A deep valley sat between the house and the mountain to the back of it, so it couldn't have been the work of a person.
"It's just a bug hitting the window, nothing more," I said, trying to console my terrified friends. But the tapping repeated at regular intervals, over and over, to the point where I couldn't help but think that something was doing it on purpose. Still, none of us were brave enough to walk over and open the curtain to check. "What a day this has been," I thought. And at that moment, I remembered the Koreijin that we had drawn on our arms. We rushed over to the kitchen to wash the drawings off, but the noise at the window didn't stop. On the contrary, it got louder and more violent. And now we could hear a growling voice as well. How can I describe it? It sounded like the death cries of someone being burnt alive. We couldn't hear it clearly, but it was something like that.
"Why did you tell them? Why?"
it sounded like it was saying. The banging on the thin window grew so violent that I feared it would break in. We had to get out of there, and so I shoved a certain something into everyone's pockets. "All right, listen. On three, we're gonna open the door and all rush for the car at once, okay?" It only took a moment to start the engine, but it felt like forever. And once the car started, I slammed my foot down on the accelerator and we took off. Nobody appeared to be possessed, and if we continued down the mountain, we'd reach our destination in about 20 minutes. Where we went wrong, however, was that the car emerged into a completely open area. The grass was knee-height and looked like it hadn't been touched for years. We'd reached a dead end, with mountains to our left and rear, and a cliff to our right. I once heard from my grandmother that there was a helipad nearby that was used during the war, and it seemed we had found it. All out of options, I decided to turn back. I drove towards the mountain so that I could make a U-turn and went to reverse, but I couldn't change the gears. And after clunking around for a bit, the car suddenly started to move backwards, like it was being dragged towards the valley below.
Terrified and panicked, we managed to jump out of the car just in time. The car rattled and clanked and sounded like it was being crushed. Everything was so sudden, but then we heard Inoue's voice.
Help me!
He was still sitting in the back seat, clinging to the grass as though his life depended on it, as the car was about to plunge over the edge of the cliff. I lost all ability to process what was happening. I was paralyzed with fear, just like the other two, but I managed to make my way over to Inoue and grabbed his hands.
Come on, man! Pull yourself out! I told him. I can't! He's pulling my legs!
He screamed, tearing up. This continued for a short while, but I was terrified and losing strength in my arms. I felt myself losing my grip on him more and more. Honestly, I thought we were going to lose him, and inside, I apologized. But at that very moment, I heard a voice by my ear.
Why?
Strangely, more than the fear I'd felt up until that point, anger welled up inside me instead, like, why the hell is this happening? I can't let go of him. If I do, then he'll end up like him, I thought. And so, I pulled with all my might. Inoue refused to give in as well, and his nails dug into my arm, scratching me from my elbow to my wrist. Blood poured out, but there was no pain. Despite that, I could still feel both his hatred and his sadness. At that moment, Murayama and Ide rushed over and then sprinkled the salt I had put in their pockets back at the house over us. A cry echoed through the air and, at the same time, Inoue suddenly felt lighter. I dragged him back up to the ground. Our bodies fell limp with relief as we lay on our backs on the grass, staring at the sky for a while. The sky in the east started to brighten. By the time the sun had fully risen, we were able to move again. We debated what to do, but there were no tire marks on the ground, and nobody would believe our story anyway. So we walked back down the mountain and took the bus back home. We visited an onmyoji on the way home, just in case, and he told us that the cold aijin that we drew on our arms was effective when the moon was in its yin phase, but during the yang phase, it instead summoned evil spirits. But evil spirits, the onmyoji continued, are spirits that are unable to move on until they have taken revenge on the evil person who made them that way to begin with. Ever since that night, we have never stepped foot in another ghost spot again. You don't want to wake up what might be sleeping there, right? And besides, even if we did, well, that scar on my arm that won't disappear several decades later still itches. For our final story this week, a young girl is classmates with another girl who has a single red eye. Rumors swirl that this girl can curse anyone she doesn't like because of it, and this appears to be true when numerous people who dislike her fall victim. But what's really going on here? Find out in Odd Eye. When I was in junior high, I had a classmate whose left eye was red. She was a cute girl by the name of Kimijima-san, and she was immediately popular with the boys, but there was also a strange rumor regarding her. That red eye was apparently cursed, and could kill anyone that she didn't like. This spread amongst the kids who went to the same elementary school as her, and none of them ever went near her. This rumor apparently came about because several people close to her at elementary school died. As for me, I thought people just hated her because they were jealous, and it wasn't uncommon for pretty girls to face hatred, so I treated her like I would anyone else. Most of the class was like that, and they didn't take the rumors seriously either. About a month later, A boy who always spoke to Kimijima-san suddenly died in an accident. I'm happy that he talks to me, but honestly, he's a bit annoying. I wish he'd leave me alone during class, Kimijima-san told me 3 days before he died. I was rather surprised to hear that he was bothering her. She kills anyone she doesn't like. Those words swirled around in my head, and as ashamed as I am to admit it, I was scared that she would come to hate me too, so I started to avoid her unless absolutely necessary. It seemed others felt the same way, and before long, everyone else started avoiding her as well. After that, she was always alone. 1 year later, when we were in the second grade, another incident happened. The rumors about Kimijima-san continued, and those who were now in class with her for the first time found her red eye creepy. People whispered about her behind her back as well. The girl who sat next to me, however, didn't speak behind her back. She was quite blatant about it, and when she arrived at school in the morning, she would move her desk away from Kimijima-san's. Those of us, including me, who were in her class the year before, sensed the dangerous atmosphere that settled over our new class. Personally, I didn't like hearing people talk ill of her, but at the same time, I also avoided her as much as possible, so it wasn't like I could tell others to act more normal either. It all happened on the way to school during the holidays that summer. On this day, we had to take part in a fire drill. The teacher was talking about how we should spend the rest of our holidays, and then a broadcast played over the speakers, letting us know that everyone should go outside, so that the simple drill could begin. But, on the way outside, someone from our class fell over going down the stairs and, like dominoes, everyone fell over. I was at the top when it happened, so I was fine, but those at the bottom were crushed underneath all the bodies and in a rather serious condition. 3 people had broken bones, and 1 person was taken to the hospital unconscious. That person was the girl who always moved her seat away from Kimijima-san. Luckily, she regained consciousness after that, but she never came back to school again, and shortly thereafter transferred. After that, nobody spoke about Kimijima-san behind her back again. More and more people acted like me in keeping a distance, but others also started to treat her just a little more kindly. Not a single person in our grade didn't know who she was, and it was like everyone either avoided her entirely or, on rare occasions, interacted with her in a friendly manner. And so this continued until we graduated from junior high. Nobody died, and there were no more injuries either. Kimijima-san then went to an all-girls high school, quite some distance away. Surprisingly, that school was also my first choice of high school, so I ended up going there as well. In the end, another 5 girls from our school also ended up going to that same all-girls high school. Kimijima-san and I ended up in the same class yet again. We had been in the same class for 4 years in a row, and yet we barely ever spoke to each other. Of course, her red eye became a hot topic, and when April rolled around, everybody was talking about her and wanting to be her friend. Just as it was at the start of junior high, Kimijima-san was suddenly surrounded by people again. That same rumor also spread quickly, but few people seemed to believe it. But still, there were, of course, some people jealous of all the attention Kimijima-san received, especially at an all-girls school where people didn't have to worry about their reputation with boys. So there were a few people who said rather snide things to her. I started to wonder if something might happen again like last time. This time, it was illness. Around the start of the rainy season, one of the girls who had been bad-mouthing Kimijima-san passed out during class. She convulsed and foamed at the mouth and had to be taken straight to a hospital. A few days later, it was reported that she had epilepsy and she would be missing school for a while. Then, right before the summer holidays, and in the middle of our test period, one of the girls who was like the leader of the class, another girl who had been bad-mouthing Kimijima-san, suddenly stopped coming to school. A few days later, our homeroom teacher told us that she had been diagnosed with leukemia and would be in the hospital for a while. And, just as it had 3 years earlier, everyone's attitude towards Kimijima-san changed. Everyone acted as if she no longer existed, and I was one of them. She was used to it, so she spent her lunchtimes reading a book, alone. During the second grade of high school, that girl with leukemia died. I don't know what happened to the other girl with epilepsy, but she never came back. And, once again, I was in the same class as Kimijima-san, making it 5 years in a row. On the first day of school that spring, someone tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and Kimijima-san was standing there. "We're in the same class again, huh?" "Yeah," was the only thing I could say. I had always tried to avoid her, so I was scared when she suddenly spoke to me. And, perhaps understanding that, she said nothing else and then walked away. For the next 3 and a bit months, until our first test period, nobody in class spoke to her. Everyone had heard what happened in junior high, and our two classmates from the year before. Even those who said they didn't believe in ghosts or curses suddenly changed their mind when it came to Kimijima-san. Just in case. 2 days before our tests were to begin for the end of first semester, something happened that I'll never forget. I was on my way home when Kimijima-san stopped me. "Hey, can I talk to you for a moment?"
"Eh? Sure.
"Would you mind reading this letter later?" She handed me a white envelope with a letter in it. Honestly, I was afraid and didn't want to take it, but I didn't think I'd be able to refuse her either. That night, as I was studying, I opened the envelope and looked inside. It was handwritten in beautiful letters. "To Naninani-san. This is our 5th year being in the same class, isn't it? We don't talk much, and I don't know if you could call us friends, but I have a favour to ask you as a classmate. As you know, not many people like me. Everyone tries not to look at me, and they stay far away from me. That's why I'm sure they'll all forget about me soon after I'm gone. People don't remember things they no longer see in front of them, so I'm sure I'll soon fade from their memories as well. That's why I'm asking you this favour. I don't know how you see me, but we've been in the same class all this time, so you've spent more time with me than anyone else has. I think you've seen me more than anyone else has. Your image of me may blur slower than others. Supposing that I disappear, I'd like for you to remember me as clearly as possible. If possible, I'd like you to tell my father and mother what I was like at school. If nobody remembers me, then it would be like I never existed in the first place. I existed, and I would hate for it to be like I didn't. That is why I'm asking you. Please, remember me. I'm sorry for this sudden letter. Kimijima." The letter didn't sit right with me, so although it was late, I called our homeroom teacher. After hearing me out, he said he would talk to her and then hung up. "Please call me back if something happens," I said. And then, 30 minutes later, he called me back. What he revealed was shocking. When he called Kimijima-san's house, her mother answered. She went to her daughter's room to get her, but she found her lying passed out on the ground. She had just tried to kill herself. She was immediately taken to the hospital and was undergoing treatment as we spoke. Our teacher said he was about to go to the hospital now and While I debated whether I should go or not as well, in the end, I decided I would. Before trying to end it, Kimijima-san stabbed her left eye with some scissors. She probably passed out from the pain of it. Her life was saved because her mother found her so quickly. She thanked me for alerting them through her tears, but I was just consumed by guilt. "No, it was our fault," I said, and burst into tears as well. Kimijima-san woke up the next day, and she somehow avoided losing sight in her left eye. I visited her several times at the hospital after that, and we spoke often. At first, she seemed a little out of it, and only spoke in murmurs. But before long, she started to cheer up and speak more. "Hey, what should I do about my eye?" she said to me one day. "Eh? Everyone talks about me because of my eye, right?" "So that's why you..." "Yeah." I felt worse for her than ever. "Don't worry about it. Just don't think about stabbing it again or anything scary like that, okay?" I said, trying to cheer her up. "Everything that has happened up until now has just been a coincidence. I'll be the exception and prove that. When you get better, I'll look you right in the eye, okay?" Around the middle of the second semester, Kimijima-san's eye patch was removed. We had become good friends by that point, and honestly, I was a little worried when I saw her red eye, but I didn't leave her side. By the time the end of the year rolled around, nothing else had happened either. "See, it's not your fault," I told her. "Yeah, maybe." Both of us were relieved. However, soon after the start of the third semester, I fell ill. My fever was unusually high, and I had to go to the hospital. The doctor said it was probably just a cold, but I was put on a drip and given medicine to bring my fever down. But it did nothing. I was constantly out of it. After the fourth day of my temperature measuring over 40 degrees, it seemed I lost consciousness. I had no memories of what happened. According to my parents, Kimijima-san visited me and cried. "Why? I like her so much, so why?" The doctors couldn't figure out why my fever wouldn't go down, and I was so weak that they feared I was about to die. But then, on the seventh day, my fever suddenly disappeared, and I recovered. Then my mother told me something about Kimijima-san. "She's in another hospital. Her eye, she... hurt it." "Eh?" As soon as I got out of the hospital, I went to visit her. She greeted me with a smile. "You got better, huh?" she said. But the eye patch she had on looked painful. She was mostly blind in her left eye. They were going to try a few more surgeries, but they didn't have much hope. According to her mother, she had tried to stab her eye again with scissors. It was the day after she came to see me lying unconscious in the hospital. Apparently, there was a lot of red blood, but when she saw me, she smiled happily. "Why was her eye like that?" I said, crying. I looked at her mother's eyes, but they were a normal brown colour. Kimijima-san eventually lost her eye and had to be fitted with a prosthetic. With that in, she often had trouble judging distances, but she honestly seemed over the moon about it. "Finally, I have a normal black eye. It's so pretty." After high school, we went to the same girls' college, and we're still friends even now. I haven't fallen ill since that day either. I don't know whether it really was because of that red eye, or if it was all just a coincidence, but everything is fine now, so I guess it doesn't matter. Don't forget to pick up Ghost in the Box, available on Amazon right now. And check out our newly revamped merchandise store at kowabana.store.
And if you'd like to chat about this week's stories, come and join us in the Coabunna Discord. You can find that link in the description or on coabunna.net. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TaraA.Devlin for exclusive bonus stories and extras, or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/CoabunnaJapan for all sorts of Japanese horror you won't find anywhere else. Thanks, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you again next time for even more Coabunna, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet.
Want even more scary stories? Head over to coabunna.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to coabunna.net now.